Chad.
Caitlin.
So good to see you again.
So good to see you. How was your night? How was your evening with all of the at the party? What party was it, by the way? Is it called a party in France?
I don't know. And the reason why I say that is because I have friends who do know the answer, who listen to this podcast, and I don't want to be wrong. Because if we know anything about me, I can't be wrong. So I'd rather plead the fifth. But either way, it was great. It was really fulfilling to talk to people of like kind of a certain elevated intelligence, you know, before we go back to talking to each other.
Yeah, sorry. I have all this grime in my beard from last night. I apologize. I just, oh, man.
How are the crabs?
You know what? They didn't show up. It was just me. I did the call that I thought we had mentally bonded over. I thought about the sound I was supposed to make really hard, and then I made it aloud also. And a couple of beachgoers looked over my way, and I was just like, sorry, I'm just trying to talk to my crab friends. And then, and they never came. So it was a night of solitude.
I bet that was embarrassing for you.
I don't feel embarrassment. That may be something you haven't figured out yet, but yeah, no, definitely. Oh, my pants are on backwards. You know what? We're just going with it. We're going with it. Where should we, okay. We go back? Are we at the bench right now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because if you're uncomfortable because of how you're sitting, it's a good sign that you're at the bench.
Yeah. But I feel like I can overhear conversations beyond the foliage mm-hmm. behind me.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. And that's why we're here, is because we're at chapter 18, Giraud Axe. And not too surprisingly, we will end up in the shrubs. But Chad, do you want to give us like a overview of the chapter?
So chapter 18, Giraud Acts, is basically a little bit of a reversal of the walk that we had yesterday, Caitlin, mm-hmm. Which is Hastings and Perrault are walking back to the Villa Genevieve. And while they're on one side of the shrubbery or passing through it, they hear Marta having a conversation. And then they get to the Villa Genevieve. And they go in, and they go into Jack's room, and Perrault and Hastings are snooping around. And then I believe Jack shows up, which causes some hijinks, behaviorally mm-hmm. speaking.
Yeah, that's true. And we have a little bit of a like surprise ending that maybe we'll keep until when we get right at the end
yes.
of the chapter. I feel like we keep saying this a lot, but it feels like there's a lot of rising action and tension in this chapter, and it ends with a big surprise. So I could see this one also being like a good ending for a section.
Yes, definitely.
They go to a shed. They're by the shed that had the second body. And I think that's important. Poirot parts the branches of the shrubbery with his hand. So he's poking his little head through. He's like, oh my God, I get all the snooping. He's in on it too now. And he can see Marta through the shrubbery. He notes, this is interesting that the houses are really close together. I'm kind of like registering this for the first time as important. And he's like, oh, hey, Mart, I have some follow-up questions for you, very innocently. And she agrees, but Hastings notes that her eyes are still afraid. And we know it's because she's a murderess. But Hastings thinks that she's worried about Jack because of their love relationship. Poirot is so tricky here. If he is at this point, I feel like he is really enjoying messing with people and he's very much in power here. And so he does something super badass. He's like, hey, Marta, do you remember when you asked me like who the suspects were? And she's like, yeah, you said the Chileans. And he's like, ask me again. So she's like, oh, okay. And then he says, surprisingly, and we know he's lying, he says, Jack. And she looks surprised and says, who suspects him? And Poirot says, Giraud, which is true.
Totally true.
He's telling the truth because that's where Giraud is.
But he's also being completely manipulative because
he's
letting her know that Marta know that there's more information now and I'm on top of it and I know it. And he's not just coming out and saying like, oh, hey, you know what? The last time we talked, you thought this. He is saying, ask me again, which is like a total, like you said, total power move.
She has no idea. She's thinking he's going to say her. This is fraught with tension. And Poirot says, he lets her know that he knows where Jack was the night of the murder. Okay, and so Marthe kind of mocks. She acts like she's concerned about proving Giraud wrong. That's kind of what she seems like her interest is in.
Yeah.
And Poirot's like, yeah, you know, I agree with that. I think Giraud is wrong, but all the facts are stacked against Jack. Everything is looking really bad for him. And then Poirot again, oh, these questions are so sinister. He's like, Marthe, are you holding anything back that could maybe help Jack? So, you know, like maybe confess. She says yes, but she tells a very different story that also involves snooping in shrubbery.
Yes.
She's like, yes, Giraud asked me to identify the second body. And she said that at first she didn't recognize him, but then she thought about it more. And she says the morning of Monsieur Renaud's murder, the morning before he was murdered, she was out in the garden, just chilling in the garden as one does. And she heard two men arguing at the Villa Genevieve in the back garden. Mm. So she peered between the shrubs to see what happened. I wonder if there are like permanent like head-shaped holes in these shrubs because everybody is like peering so much.
Well, the other thing too that's important to remember too about shrubs, because you know I've written three or four books about shrubs, is that it's really not possible to separate shrubs, put your face in the hole where you have created in the shrubs, and then not have the shrubs poke the sides of your face. So all of these people should have scratches all over their faces. I don't want to get, you know, it's just a pet peeve of mine, Caitlin.
When Kenneth Branagh makes this, everybody will just be constantly bleeding.
There'll be a lot of iodine, a lot of Band-Aids, a lot of like cotton balls. Yeah. And definitely. Yeah. That's what most of the conversations and dialogue would take place between characters while they're kind of touching each other's faces up. Like, oh my gosh, you got a bad one. That might be infected. This book should have been called Murder Between the Shrubs, frankly.
I know. Oh, my God.
sorry, back on track. God, sorry.
No, it's fine. I will have to say, though, in conversations between you and me about, like, editing these episodes and things like that, you were like, they're taking a really fun turn, you know? Like, we're being very playful. But you were also like, it's also accounting two people's descent into madness. As I tried to come through this, I was like, yeah, that's very true. Yeah. So anyway, she sees these two men arguing. She recognizes Monsieur Renaud, but she thinks she's starting to recognize that the mysterious man that he was arguing with is the body they found. And she cites a difference between them in their clothes that kind of signify class. Like he looks like he's maybe impoverished or maybe living on the streets. And that obscured the connection for her because when he was found, he was in these very like fancy clothes, although his body kind of made it seem like he was still living a rougher life.
One of the things that Poirot noticed about the second body was, I think, wasn't there something with fingernails?
Yeah, like there was dirt underneath the fingernails and his hands were kind of rough. You know, they weren't nice and manicured like a Monsieur Renaud might be. Yeah.
This guy is not a member of the socialized circle that Renaud was in.
Yeah. And that it's weird then that he's found in these clothes.
Yeah. And, that he's found on that estate too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so after Marthe leaves, Poirot says to Hastings, he confesses that he believes her. But he said that it was really important that they talk to her before Jack could interfere so that they could hear her genuine answers. Because Jack, as of now, Jack is wanting to cover for Marthe, but he's also kind of wanting to cover for Bella. He's got himself into a bit of a pickle where, like, perhaps both of the women that he has romantic interests in could be suspected of or actually have murdered his father.
Right. Oh,
what a dramatic life he leads.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, in some ways, Jack, it would be easier right now if you were crossing the Andes by foot.
Right? Yeah. He could just like contemplate existence.
Exactly.
So that's one of the reasons why Jack is sent on this wild goose chase, is so that Poirot can get to Marthe first. Luckily, she was right there. And Hastings is just like, at this point, he is totally following the Jack trail. He's like, I cannot believe that such a nice man like Jack could kill his father. And Poirot is like, Hastings, you're being way too sentimental. And he says that Jack definitely has a financial motive, or at least he thought he did before the fucking will.
Right, was changed.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird, too, that in order to change the will, and I know we brought this up in a different context, but if you're the gardener and, you know, the head of the whatever staff,
yeah,
and you're going to watch Paul Renault sign his changed will, is it something where then, like, I'm not just from a class way, that these two people who work for the estate then potentially know more than Jack does about where the money is going?
Totally.
Do you think that speaks to just how unimportant those two people are within the concepts of this high society thing? It's like these people who don't matter can know what the will means because their opinions don't matter at all?
Yes. I would say that you said it very well. I feel like that's always implied.
Okay.
But it kind of feels like, and this is, I don't condone this point of view, but it's almost like, well, let the bookcase sign the will, or, you know, like let the standing lamp say that it was there.
Right.
And this is always, I think, to the wealthier and more powerful person's detriment, that they underestimate those people. I think that's always kind of, although, I don't know, the way that Christie handles it, sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. All it does is really perpetuate a secret. And it allows the secret to be discovered later, after the creator of the will has died.
Right.
Again, with the will. So Hastings then he's trying to think like Poirot. He's like, let's take everything in. How does they call him a tramp. How does that fit in? And Poirot says, well, Giraud would guess that this mysterious person was an accomplice. But the way Poirot says it, we know that's not the case. We definitely get this idea that Poirot doesn't think it's Jack. Hastings does, but he's trying to think like Poirot and just it doesn't work. And so then Poirot suggests something very fun. He's like, let's go through Jack's things. that's another reason why I sent him away. They go up to his room, and I love this part so much. I love it when Hastings is pouting. It's my favorite Hastings. Like, brooding or pouting is the best. And so this is a perfect opportunity for that, because Poirot is looking through Jack's things, but he's doing it thoroughly, methodically. He's like placing everything back the exact way he found it, which is smart, but he's like taking his time. He's very careful. He's not letting Hastings in on what he's looking for. So Hastings is like, oh my God, I'm so bored. I feel like he's kind of like a toddler you need to give a tablet to or something like that, you know? Entertain yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Back in the day, like one of those paddle and ball things that just like,
Yeah. Or like a yo-yo. There's a little bit of tension here because suddenly a car arrives. This is really upsetting to Poirot. He's like, I cannot place things back with proper method. And Hastings is like, you've got to work quickly, Poirot. Poirot's going as fast as he can, but he's really upset about it. And then finally, Poirot makes a cry of triumph and he finds something that looks like a photograph, but he doesn't tell Hastings what it is. Hastings doesn't tell us what it is. And then they like kind of go downstairs really guiltily. And they're like, hey, Giraud, nothing to see here. How's it going? And so Giraud is like, hey, guys, I just arrested Jack for the murder of his father. And Poirot says to Jack, I guess he brings Jack in. Why? He's like, what do you say to that, jeune homme? Which is like, what do you say to that young man? And Jack replies mysteriously, nothing. And so that's unexpected. Oh, my God. You know, you'd imagine that he'd be like, Giraud was wrong, you know, or something like that. Yes. And when he replies nothing, it's like, oh, he's covering for someone. And again, it's Bella at this point because he thinks, right?
Yeah. Because of
he thinks it's Bella the whole time.
Yes. Caitlin, I have a little brown paper bag here that has half a sandwich in it left. Do you want that or something to tide us over for chapter 19? Or it's a little sandy. Let me get the sand off of it.
Thanks, but no thanks. I actually have a picnic lunch being delivered, and I'll eat it at like a 12-foot distance from you.
Okay. No, that sounds great. Do you want me to sit over there then and shout during the podcast?
Yes. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Because, of course, we don't have microphones in France. Yeah. Uh-uh. Uh-huh. First of all, last chapter, you gave me a great idea for one of our T-shirts, which is just going to be called the Jack Trail. And it's going to be all the places Jack goes on a T-shirt with like Merlinville as the backdrop. And then,
oh my God, a little map.
A little map. So, okay. So, you know,
I love that so much.
I don't know if you know this, Caitlin, but you and I are going to write a avant-garde postmodern play about Perrault. Oh, no. And it's going to have one setting. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And the setting is going to be jail. And one side of the stage is going to be Poirot. And then in the other compartment is going to be Poirot's consciousness.
Oh, no. I don't like this.
And you know what it's going to be called?
What?
The Little Gray Cells.
Oh, stop. I'm ending the podcast right now and walking away.
Worth it, though, right? Worth it.
It was worth it. Not at all. go think about your actions. Yeah,
chapter
okay.
19, I used my gray cells is the name of it. Really, the most important thing is we get a lot more of Poirot kind of figuring things out and talking about it. But I guess the most important thing we'd say is there's a little bit of a conflict between Poirot and Giraud, which I think is the most interesting part.
I think it's just mostly a delightful like exchange, but then we also Poirot starts pulling the threads together because we have all the stuff that's happening at Villa Marguerite and we know the Baraldi case, but the connection to the reader hasn't been explained at all. And so he's starting to like slowly weave that together. But of course, this is only chapter 19. We have 9 chapters left. Let's start to put them together, but I'm not going to tell you everything. So Poirot, he like turns to Giraud and he's like, what are your grounds for arresting him? He means Jack. And Giraud is getting so snarky at this point. They're not trying to be nice to each other anymore. He's like, do you expect me to give them to you? And Poirot says, as a matter of courtesy, yes. Giraud looked at him doubtfully. He was torn between desire to refuse rudely and the pleasure of triumphing over his adversary. You think I have made a mistake, I suppose, he sneered. It would not surprise me, Poirot replied. Oh, Poirot is just, this is Poirot at his most petty.
Yeah, I also think potentially in a weird way, his most transparent. Maybe other than when he gets really excited that he's figured something out. But this is like, mm-hmm. this is definitely pure Poirot when confronted with an adversary.
Giraud puts forward his theory and Poirot is like, let me tell you why you're wrong. He's like, Giraud, you are missing the fact that there's a grave that's been dug and the lead piping and your theory does not take that into account. And the thing that we really get from this too is Poirot says that Madame Renaud's story was false. And he's like, we know she loved her husband, but she's shielding his murderer. That doesn't make sense. And he's kind of leading everyone to be like, who would you protect? You know, right. Why would she lie? And so then Giraud is just like, ugh, okay, I'll leave. And then, as you said, we get to another convenient injury. Do you want to explain what happens?
Mrs. Renaud comes up at the top of the staircase, I believe, and sees Jack being led away by Giraud and the other police people. And then she faints and kind of falls down the stairs. And she has like a concussion. But then, and I don't think I'm wrong about this, because if she was injured one more time between now and the end of the book, it would be like a Marx Brothers movie. At some point in time, there is some sort of discussion with the doctor, whose name I can't remember, who says that she's in a slight coma and likely won't regain consciousness for a week. So if you don't have an IV, how are you getting food for a week? These are questions that I ask only because it's one of those things where, again, it's probably somewhat important that Mrs. Renault is out of the picture for the next couple of chapters.
Yeah.
And here's the reason why. She sees her son being taken away. She has, okay, and if we look at it seriously from her standpoint, she plots with her husband to use the body of a man who died of an epileptic fit to be the husband's body after being mutilated, so the husband can escape because someone is onto the husband's secret past. And then so they concoct this whole thing. Paul Renault ties up his wife in their bedroom. And then when she comes to and talks to the investigators, she thinks when she goes to identify the body that it's going to be the mutilated body of the Drifter. Jesus. But instead, it's her actual husband. So she completely loses her mind. She falls down. She faints. And then she's out of the picture for a little while. Then she regains consciousness and starts talking to Poirot and everybody else about what, you know, and she has to make up this stuff because she doesn't want to be caught for the plot that she and Paul were doing. And now she kind of feels like she's in the clear a little bit. She's still probably in shock because the man she loves is dead unexpectedly. And now she's like, okay, I wonder what's going on downstairs. I'm going to come out and then her son is being led away for the murder of her husband. And so, of course, she would faint and hit her head.
Yeah, that's true.
That said, it is incredibly convenient.
Because she's the only one who can really tell the truth about everything to a degree. She can tell the truth about the setup. So it's really important that she's gone, or else we could have gotten everything solved a lot faster. So she's taken away. And then Hastings is like, whoa, Poirot, let's process this. And he's like, Poirot, do you think Jack is guilty? And Poirot replies that if he is guilty, I love this, it's in spite of Giraud's theories, not because of them, which I love. He would be like, it would be an accident. Poirot's like, Hastings, use your little gray cells. You will see everything clearly. Let's go down to the beach. And we can just like sit at the beach and we can review everything and put it together. And I'd really prefer if you figured this out yourself. He's taking a very like learning through experience method. So they sit at the beach together and Hastings is reflecting and he's like, I know the Baraldi case is important and I know that Giraud doesn't know about it. So that's a big factor in like why Giraud's wrong is because he's like missing this huge portion. Hastings tells Poirot what he's thought and Poirot's like, this is great. We're finally getting somewhere, but there's someone we've completely forgotten about. And Hastings is like, who? And Poirot's like, Georges Canot.
Now, is this something where they already know that Renault is Canot?
Poirot does. Hastings has no idea.
Hastings hasn't put it together yet. So that is just incredibly cruel on any number of levels.
Oh my God. I think we have to mark this milestone that we are at chapter 20, which means that we are like in the home stretch. We have 8 more chapters left, and what an encouraging chapter title. It says, an amazing statement.
Okay, so chapter 20, an amazing statement.
Amazing.
It's amazing. This is complicated in the sense that we, Caitlin, you and I, have already discussed a lot of the resolution to the things that Poirot is leading Hastings through, like a little bit through a group of shrubberies, like trying to get to a place. We already have had the straight line to where they're going. So I would just say that we don't really need to go over a ton of stuff on this, but let's work a little bit to what the amazing statement actually is.
Amazing. Yeah. So Poirot is starting to go over and review all of the clues that to a first-time reader, you're just like, what is happening? There's this like glut of facts, of things that don't make sense. And he's like slowly kind of working through the logic with Hastings. We all know where he's going, so we're not going to go over all of it, but we'll give you the highlights. And he's really encouraging Hastings to think about the role of Georges Queneau. And he kind of is like, well, could he be this person? Could he be this person? You know, Hastings is like, is he Jack? Da, da, da. And they like kind of narrow it down and just kind of chip away at all of this stuff. They kind of come to the decision that absolutely Monsieur Renaud was not having an affair. He was being blackmailed. And Hastings brings up the letter from Bella. And Poirot guesses that Bella was there to see Jack. And he guesses that Bella told Monsieur Renaud that she had feelings for Jack. And Monsieur Renaud tried to buy her off, which is why she was there, which is why he told her to leave. And she tears up the check, which is why we find the piece of the check under the rug.
Right. She's insulted by the offer. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's also important here, too, because Agatha Christie is doing something that really good authors do, I think, which is that throughout all of this like windy, windy discussion of things that we've already discussed, Poirot is leading Hastings to where the reader needs to be. We're also revisiting and renewing the concept of Bella and also Cinderella, because we're about to take a little detour that no one really sees coming in the next couple of chapters. Yeah. So it's really important.
Leaving France.
Yeah, we're leaving. Yeah, exactly. And we're going on a trip. So it's important to reintroduce those characters.
Absolutely. We also get with that, we get the explanation about why Bella's letter was in the overcoats. And we learn finally that the overcoats were switched, which is why Poirot was measuring the different lengths of the overcoats. Monsieur Renaud was in his son's jacket by mistake. But like, this is totally Agatha Christie showing that she can do, it's almost like, she's like in her Baroque period. She's like, let's see how like big and lavish I can make this. Because if you think about it, we could remove so many of these clues and have the same story. But the kind of delight in it is that she's like, I am creating all of this chaos. Yes. And then I'm going to explain it. And so this chapter, I think, is really masterful in the sense that she's not only working with explaining what happened, but explaining what could have happened through Hastings making mistakes. And that is so hard to wrap my mind around. If you were like, okay, I'm creating this mystery. Here's the Hastings wrong guesses, the Giraud wrong guesses. And I'm going to paint those pictures in a reasonable way, but they're all wrong. And so then the really big other thing that we realize after we start to figure out the Bella detail and the coat detail, Poirot really is leading Hastings towards the identity of Georges Queneau. And so finally, Hastings is like, oh my God, it's Monsieur Renaud. And he's in like disbelief. And then Poirot's like, and now let's loop back to the blackmail. Doesn't it make sense now that Madame Dubray, who is Madame Beraldi, would be blackmailing Monsieur Renaud because he's Georges Queneau? But then Hastings, there's this really great exchange, and Hastings is like, well, wait, okay, that makes sense. But if Georges Queneau planned the crime, and the crime was killing Monsieur Renaud, did he plan his own murder? And then Poirot's like, his only reply is, and then the chapter ends, eh bien, mon ami, that is just what he did do. Then Hastings is about to get to the fact that it was a plan to fake a death.
And when it leaves off at the end of 20 there, where he says that is just what he did do, the concept is that you might think for a second that he planned literally his own death as opposed to his own escape.
Yeah. So that wording, I mean, yeah, like Hastings, I love that Hastings is just like, wait, what? I'm going to take this really literally. And he needs to, because, so A lot is revealed in this chapter. Hastings is finally sort of on the same page as Poirot, but of course we have a lot more to do. So chapter 21, Hercule Poirot on the case. And I love it because, like, I feel like with an amazing statement, all of the chapters from now on are named in a very, like, action way.
Yes.
They're all about some kind of tension or something is about to happen, as opposed to, like, Poirot elucidates or, like, a photograph. So Hercule Poirot on the case, things are starting to really pick up.
And what we're seeing here is really Hastings ending up being like, oh my God, you're seeing so much more. I can't believe that I was thinking that Giraud was the mastermind detective here. But this is what's so great about this part. It doesn't get you to the actual murderer yet. But it gives you all of this information that you would need on your first read to figure it out. So that would be my question too, Caitlin, is where do you feel like the cutoff is for giving yourself credit for figuring out who the murderer is? Like, what chapter?
I think maybe in these last 8 chapters, you could start to hone in.
Okay.
I think this can be solved with context clues. You could guess early on that Martz is a killer, but in no way could you get all this stuff. But I think you could. You wouldn't know why.
Right.
You wouldn't know the motive, but you could, like, intuit it. And now maybe you could put it together. But I think there's also so many red herrings along the way.
Yeah.
That you could switch a lot. Poirot then just, like, he expands on Hastings' big revelation. He explains after the whole Baraldi case, Cano went to Canada and found success in Chile. He returns back to France, sets up business in England. We get the explanation of how he accidentally ran into Madame Dubray. They're like accidental neighbors.
Yep.
He explains the issues between Jack falling in love with Marthe. We get the whole explanation of the setup between Monsieur and Madame Renaud wanting to fake the death because they want to escape Madame Dubray. We get the explanation of the tramp in the garden conveniently dying and everything getting set up. So yeah, and actually kind of tying into that, we just get a really nice play-by-play of that night. And I think it's good to just go over the quick details to clarify it. So, you know, we have the chauffeur sent away. Jack is sent away so he won't be suspected. They're assuming that the female servants will be so afraid that they won't even look at the body. So they're like, it has to be Madame Renaud who, like, identifies the body. Monsieur Renaud ties his wife's wrists really tight. He goes out to the links. He digs a hole where he knows there's going to be some construction soon. So it's guaranteed that the body will be found. His plan is to leave after the burial on the last train, which is why the watch was fast, to make it seem as if the crime happened at a time that he had enough time to leave.
Yes.
So they're messing with the time. This is why he's so annoyed when Bella arrives, because he's like, we are on a schedule of faking my death.
Here's a check.
And you are, yeah, you're just like, get away. And Monsieur Renaud leaves the front door open to kind of make it look like people broke through. He then goes through the window, smooths over the flower bed, which is why Poirot was so obsessed with the flower bed as a clue, is because he's like, the gardener was working on this and one side has footprints and the other side has zero footprints. It's sloppy. Something's up with that. Somebody was covering something up. He then goes to the grave and then he's murdered as Poirot presents by an unknown hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so Poirot's like, Hastings, that's what I mean by two crimes. There's a fake murder and then there's a real murder. And then Poirot's like, and obviously Monsieur Renaud made a big mistake involving me. Big mistake. It's like Pretty Woman. but then Poirot says, which is, he's like, this is why we have 7 more chapters. There is a second deeper mystery here that we need to solve. Now we have to start over and we have to figure out who would benefit from Monsieur Renaud's death. And so then Poirot is like, I have a little idea. We gotta leave. We have to go to England and we have to find a witness. And that witness is Bella Duveen. Poirot kind of explains how he figures out that she's an actress. He's like, Jack Renaud was a young man with plenty of money and 20 years of age. The stage is sure to be the home of his first love. Okay. But Poirot then brings out the photograph that he found as he was methodically and then not methodically looking through Jack's bedroom. And it's a photo of Bella with the words, with love from Bella, but it also looks like Cinderella because it turns out they're twins.
Just let's do the flashback thing to chapter one with Hell Said the Duchess. And this is the sister of the woman, the young woman that Hastings met on the train. Cinderella, who was flirting with Hastings, said, and also manipulating him, and also later with the knife, was saying that she was looking for her sister and that she and her sister had a show. They had a thing that they did in different towns, I'm sure London and Paris and things. And so now Poirot has honed in on that, at least that Bella is probably on the stage because Jack fell in love with her, which sure makes sense. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
Caitlin, I think your picnic basket is being delivered as we speak. Would you like me to go sit 20 feet away? And
I'd like you to leave, but first you can see all the great things I have in it. I have like a nice little bottle of wine. I have a sandwich. Oh. I have a little dessert. Yeah. It's going to be really good.
That sounds really delicious. Did you want me to leave and walk all the way back down to the beach to eat my something sandwich?
That's good. And then after we do that, I think we've got to go. We've got to go to England again.
We'll catch the next ferry to London, I believe.
Say goodbye to your fellow crab friends.
I will. I will, but temporarily, right? We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. Okay, see you soon.
See you soon.